Yeah, no, we were just talking about how new the whole program was. I mean, you're right. I mean, it had evolved.
No community development team when I was there. No education team when I was there.
Not even CD.
Not even CD. We were strictly an agricultural team.
Okay, I thought CD or RD, as they sometimes said, would have been from early days. Yeah. I guess it was in Laos, but that was different. That was construction, and that was almost Seabees building airstrips for CIA.
You know? Guy got his leg cut off when a cable snapped, you know?
Who is that?
I was wondering, what were they doing? You know, but they were building. And the team in Cambodia went in to carve out an experimental farm. So it was
But yeah, you get the CD, you get the education.
You get women on the team. Mm-hmm. You have people... And the magnitude of the team.
Right.
See, there were, 20 volunteers when I was there? Mm-hmm. Maybe 25? Mm-hmm. By now, there were well over 100. Mm-hmm. At Tet, the Tet Offensive, there were 168, I think. Mm-hmm. So, the magnitude of the team, the nature of the team, the nature of the volunteers, all brand new to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, many of the volunteers also might have changed dramatically in terms of their college experience.
Sure. Different age, different generation coming out of college.
Sure.
Different language.
But I was thinking different colleges too. Fewer Aggies
Aggies.
Yeah,
sure.
and more of the liberal arts. Mm-hmm. Which might have fed into things too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was different.
I'm beginning to have a lot of empathy for your position and what you walked into. It was kind of like windmill that you didn't realize.
It was so exciting.
I'm sure it was.
So stimulating.
Yeah.
The adrenaline flowed, man. We did good stuff. And there were good people, you know. I really can't overemphasize the quality of those people on the team at that time. Mm-hmm. They were good. Couple exceptions.
Well, there's always, but you've got 168. Of course, sure. There are going to be some people who you don't like or whatever, who don't work out.
But high quality.
Yeah.
I've always said we had the cream of the crop there. Mm-hmm. We had the people who were concerned enough to come over and try and do something in a positive way.
Yeah. Despite all the discussion back home.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't take away from the people who were in the peace vigils and demonstrations and made their voices known here.
This is just an extra step.
You know, put yourself at risk and do something. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I was just looking at off to the side here at something else.
Sorry.
Still going on with you. Did you have to, in 67, in addition to talking to people, getting a new staff and adjusting to yourself, cut back deliberately on some programs and some people?
We didn't cut back until the Tet Offensive.
Okay. So everything was pretty much left.
Right.
And maybe you programmed out new spots to have... Were there any differences in programming for the future based on the 67 resignations?
No, I don't think so.
I didn't expect any. I'm just asking.
There may have been some locations that we didn't replace people at for programmatic reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a job there now.
Right.
But I don't think the resignations had an effect on our program.
Okay.
The other facet of this that I just think about now is the diplomacy, the diplomatic job of keeping relations with AID, with the embassy, with the American effort.
Oh, yes,
solid. Mm-hmm. Well, it was shaky, you know.
Yeah,
trying to solidify it. Because, you know, with the IVSers were fast becoming seen as a team of malcontents and troublemakers and at best, you know, traitors at worst.
Yeah.
So, there was
you would have had some very right-wing people that you had to deal with.
Yep. A lot of time, a lot of effort went into solidifying the relationships with the Vietnamese government and with, but mainly with the the U.S. government. Relationships with other voluntary agencies was never jeopardized. It's very interesting.
Well, Don told me when I was in Washington that he got to be in charge of the NGO group.
Yeah.
And I've read some of the minutes that he had kept from his time in tenure. And it was very clear to me that there was a split within that group in terms of world vision on one part and then American friends way off on the other.
Sure.
You know, and so, so in other words, the friends that IVS had before were still friends. Et cetera. And everyone else, this is your problem, we'll observe you. We still wish God bless.
Yes, and I don't know whether I was very active on that council of voluntary agencies, and I don't know whether I was a president.
That's what it was called, the Council of Voluntary Agencies?
Seems to me it was. I never felt that any of our relationships were jeopardized. And I reflected on that, I remember, because I just felt that they empathized with our position in a way that nobody else could. Anyway, that's an interesting side to that, too.
But it was AID, mostly, that you had to...
AID, U.S. Army.
Oh, the Army, of course, because of cords, yeah.
Embassy. And all of the cord structure, sure. And, you know, we would find ourselves in
so you wanted to stay away from cords, and then you went and still had to deal with them.
Yeah, I just saw the irony of that.
You
know what?
You know, we were dealing with them more intensely.
I didn't have to be a Yalzin person either. You know, I didn't have to say yes or no.
Yes, that's true. That's
I was
true.
Independent.
You did have some autonomy.
That was the beauty
of
that.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. But I would find myself in meetings, for instance, in emergency, what do they call it? Emergency planning. You know, what happens if there's an invasion? What happens if they bomb Saigon? Well, what, you know? So you find yourself in meeting with the Army and the Embassy and Cords and CIA and all the American structure.
Yeah.
To figure out who's going to get who out. Where do you go in a case of emergency? We were, after the Tet Offensive, for probably, I can't remember, long time, months. We were issued radios.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Walkie-talkies. And we had to check in, use the codes, you know, all that Mickey Mouse, all that protocol. The best word, and we were tied into the U.S. system of rescue, of aid, you know, and all around the city of Saigon, people were, regardless of what their political affiliations or whatever, they were issued these radios. Now, the missionary, I don't think the missionaries had them, although they maintained pretty tight ties during the end for that. But yeah, so you know, it's a almost a schizophrenic relationship you developed with these guys.
Yeah.
And when the Tet Offensive came, we were completely at the disposal of the embassy to tell us where to go, where was safe, you know, and get our food there for a week. You know, we moved our operation downtown. So it was a schizophrenic relationship.
I didn't know that you had radios, because I knew that they had them in Laos almost all the time.
We never had them before.
That's right.
And we just had them in Saigon.
Oh, only in Saigon, not in the provinces.
No, I don't think the guys had them in the provinces.
Okay, because that was the opposite in Laos. They were for the forward areas, as they called it. Everyone had to radio in once a day in the beginning and then later twice a day as things got worse. Or otherwise, they'd send out military to find them.
Sure. Well, that's how it was in Saigon for a long time. You know, a period of months, I don't know how long.
So, we've talked about you mentioned tech a little bit, and that was down on the list in terms of the chronology thing. And I had, what steps/program changes did you undertake in an effort to improve security before TET or after TET? Well, we know after, but you know, I was wondering if there was some before too, if you had an inkling that something was coming.
Tell you a story.
Okay.
Tell you a story. I don't get many war stories, but I'll tell you a story. Dave Gittleson was killed shortly before TET.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Montgomery went to identify the body.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 3 or 4 days before TET. I could be wrong, but it was shortly before TET, maybe even more. We were stunned by that first mm-hmm. loss we had. The evening of TET, the eve of the first day of TET, like the night before the first
yeah.
day of TET, I got on the telephone. See, we could call Washington. And we did it through the military
mm-hmm.
telephone system.
Yeah.
But I had to call when they were open
mm-hmm.
and when I could get through. Okay. Which meant we had to call at night when it was daytime over there.
Right.
I put in a call, and you put in a call, and then you wait, and the operator calls you back, and then you try and get connected.
This is the good old days.
I got connected probably around 2 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
2 to 3 in the morning.
Your time.
My time in Saigon. My purpose in calling was to tell AZ that the situation was going to hell in the handbag. And I remember that phrase because I use that. And that security was our prime concern.
Mm-hmm.
And that I wanted to cut the team down by half.
Really?
Yeah. That's the purpose of my call.
Mm-hmm.
I get on the phone, and Cliff Dokes, is that his name? Somebody. In the office, connected with him. And he says something that I still don't remember, but I remember it didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave the phone to A.Z. Gardner. And A.Z., who was he was a shipping magnate, just kind of a take-charge old man, He says, "Hang in there, Dan. We're behind you no matter what you do. We're watching on television. We're listening to the radio. We're following it. I don't know what it said, television or radio.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever you have to do. We're behind you."
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea
what he was talking about.
It was strange. And of course, I didn't have the sense enough to say, "What are you talking about, AZ?" But it
yeah.
was a strange, strange conversation. And I told him I wanted to cut the team down by at least half.
Because of your fears of security.
Yes, after Gittleson's death and the way things were going. And I came away assured that I could do whatever I wanted to. I wasn't AZ. That was not the way he operated.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn came. And I looked out the window and there were streams of refugees coming down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I still didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
7 o'clock, you may have listened to the Far East Broadcasting Company out of the Philippines.
Not
a missionary.
Likely.
Well, it was a missionary broadcast that had, besides BBC, it had the most up-to-date, best news.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, their commercials were horrendous.
Yes, probably.
But I tuned in. And there's where I learned that there was a major offensive going on in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly the Gardner conversation is clear.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Never, just that whole sequence of events. And so we were trying to figure out where this was happening. Well, later on in that morning, we heard the news that the embassy was under attack.
Mm-hmm.
So what we thought, it was an attack on Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
And all these refugees were coming in mm-hmm. because they had attacked Saigon and brought in divisions and everything. I don't know that, but by that night, we had been designated a hotel down in Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved our whole operation down there. My wife was 6 months pregnant.
Mm. With daughter, too.
Yeah, daughter, too.
Mm-hmm.
We moved, took everything we could think of that we would need,
mm-hmm.
and moved out, which meant we were completely out of touch with IVS, the team in Vietnam.
But didn't a lot of volunteers go to the IVS house during Tet?
No. That house was under siege. There were bullet marks all around that compound.
Mm-hmm.
We vacated the IVS house. We went to a hotel down in Saigon,
okay.
in the middle of Saigon. And we stayed there for a number of days. And I had no, of course, communication all over the country was cut.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea if we had anybody killed, missing,
mm-hmm.
what the situation. I had no idea at all. And that was a terrible, terrible feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Several days later, and I remember that the embassy brought around in convoys, they brought food to us and water.
At the hotel?
Yeah. When we finally got back to the IVS house, probably 3 or 4 days later.
Okay.
Nothing had been destroyed, but it was obvious that there was fighting going on in the compound.
Mm. Because of the bullet holes in the wall and things
uh-huh.
like that.
Uh-huh. But nobody had been inside. Nobody had trashed the place.
Uh-huh.
It was a century as we left it.
Uh-huh. So volunteers came to the IVS house then. After?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was
You couldn't get any place. You couldn't come. You couldn't move.
Right,
communications and transportation had been frozen in place.
So the volunteers that I've spoken to are confusing the actual fighting of Tet in the first few days
mm-hmm.
with their later going into Saigon right. to the house,
right.
which was a few days after that.
Right.
Okay, all right. That's why I was
And if they
about
were
that.
In the provinces, they could not have gotten to Saigon in any event.
No, no.
See.
Only if they happened to be visiting and gotten caught up in it.
Yeah. So we tried to communicate.
Which some might have done because it was Tet, so they were coming in for celebrations.
Right,
yeah.
Sure. And many volunteers may have been in Saigon for Tet anyway.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Or other places for Tet, off of their stations, see?
Right, of course.
I remember that it took almost a month to account for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We took brown wrapping paper, a roll,
mm-hmm.
and unrolled it and put it on the wall and put each volunteer's name
mm-hmm.
when they had been contacted. And that they were okay. We were missing three people.
Mm-hmm.
In Hue, three people were captured. Two others had hid in the rafters.
In Hue?
In Hue.
Okay. So five initially were...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the end, three people were captured.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed captured a month or two. And then they were released. Sandy Johnson? Yeah. Was with a Quaker doctor. But anyway. I don't know the others. It may be that they were missing. It seems to me three people were captured.
No, there was the Johnson, but they let her go after a bit.
Oh, yeah, but that was a month or two.
Yeah, yeah.
She traipsed around, but were there others that were captured, or she's the only one?
No, Mark Caillé.
Yeah, Mark.
And
the French guy.
That's right. French-Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he spoke with a heavy accent.
I'm sure.
And the third one?
I forget his name, but I've read Caillé's memoirs.
Yeah.
of being a captive and eventually being released out of Hanoi Hilton.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't remember the other guy's name.
In any
event. I think it began, the last name began with a G. Anyway.
Anyway. Traumatic times.
Mm-hmm.
Traumatic times for us. Not only had to worry about the ones we couldn't contact, we had volunteers all over the place dislocated because they were celebrating Tetonetron, or they were celebrating over here, and they were from that station and they couldn't get back, and it was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I had volunteers in Saigon who couldn't get back home, and they're just sitting around, and you know, that old fermentation process begins. Really traumatic times.
Mm-hmm.
The staff met during those times, and you know, it's all kind of a blur except for little snippets.
Mm-hmm.
We made a conscious decision to cut back,
mm-hmm.
and we called the team reduction. And we talked a little bit before how we did that. We did a great deal of sensitivity.
Uh-huh.
But the end result is our team went from 165 down to, what, 80, 85 or something like that. And I was very pleased with how that was handled. The staff was good. Volunteers honored everybody's decision one way or another. Nobody was accused of cutting and running or anything. It was handled well.
Well, I had some people say that their time was almost up, so they decided to go.
Early retirement.
Yeah. Well, it made sense.
Sure did.
I mean, a lot of people would have to spend so long picking up the pieces that their time would be over anyway.
And their tour was disrupted.
Yeah.
Sure.
Was special consideration given to people who would have been conscientious objectors so as they could get their 2 years in?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Was wondering about that.
Not that I remember. Okay. I really don't.
If someone had just fairly recently come in, would they be encouraged to leave?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Not because they were fairly recent. There would be other factors involved.
What were the general factors? I know you don't want to name any names because nobody's been identified. And sometimes even naming factors can cut you close to identity. So,
where they had been assigned or where they were going to be assigned mm-hmm. is one.
In terms of security.
In terms of security, in terms of job performance, you know, could they be useful?
Oh, okay. If they didn't seem to be working out, why continue on if we're going to cut by
if
half?
If there's any question, how did they handle the Tet Offensive? How did they hold up under it? How did they hold up under the tension and that kind of thing? So there were a lot of different factors. I read the letter I wrote to the team, and I said it's a judgment call, and that really is.
Yeah, I was wondering what you would look for behavior during Tet.
Oh, I think it's kind of obvious if a person gets panicky, if a person gets highly emotional.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to describe, but you see it. You know it when you see it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, just to pause for a second.
Landing in that situation, that's kind of the proof of the pudding.
Let me pause for a second. Okay, back on again. No, it is kind of a test. I mean, well, a test for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even grizzly old veterans are still, you know, it's really literally under fire. So there's a full range of security, job performance, viability of job sites, how they behave personally, mm-hmm. people's perceptions of them, whether they reported in responsibly at the time and, you know, helped out with others and et cetera, et cetera. One thing that you said in your yellow form here was as the as cop, why, this is my question, why as cop did you work more with Vietnamese than with Americans?
Because I guess there's a couple of answers to that. One of our concerns was not to be seen as an extension of the American policy.
Okay.
We went to great lengths to dispel that image. I would always work with the Vietnamese if I had a choice for that reason.
Okay.
That's number one.
All right.
Reason number two is because we wanted to assume a role of support to the Vietnamese, not as an extension of the U.S. effort.
Okay.
And for practical reasons, we knew the Vietnamese knew what they were doing a lot more than the Americans did.
Okay, all right.
And they know their problems. They know what they need. And we didn't want to be an advisor. We didn't want to be, like I said before, advisor, a policeman. We didn't want to be a guy who stamps approval on programs and projects. We didn't want to be seen as Daddy Warbuckles. We wanted to be seen as someone who would work with the Vietnamese at their level, on their agendas, with their priority, and give respect and homage to their values and culture. So we tried to work with the Vietnamese.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Oh, it sure does. I wasn't sure in the context there. Yeah.
I still had to maintain ties with AID because that was our source of funding.
Oh, obviously.
Still had to maintain ties with the embassy because we were Americans mostly. But they didn't see much of me.
As much as they had to and no more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't hanging out with
them. Well, no. No, I mean, I would have been surprised at that after you had already quit them. You did mention that there were increasing problems with AID. What were you referring to? I mean, pre-Tet or post-Tet, or and what kind of problems were you thinking of when you made that statement, which was a little vague?
Well, since becoming the chief of party, AID always, and it's not didn't begin there, but that was my involvement with it. Wanted the IVS team to be little AID workers in the field.
Thank you much.
Got more coffee out there.
Okay, so then it wasn't just the resignations.
No. No.
This is the broader thing of control
and
manipulation.
What the resignations then did would say, if these guys aren't willing to work with AID and for us because we're funding them, then they're suspect. Okay.
Right.
They're anti-American. They're torpedoing the cause. They're subverting the American effort here. They're not with us. They must be again.
They must be again. Sure, real Hatfield McCoy kind of thing.
So,
okay.
Does that make sense?
I mean, that makes a great deal of sense. And I wasn't sure how it fit in with either resignations or the Tet Offensive, but it doesn't. It's the generic problem.
Yes, and I think it was amplified by the letter. It was amplified by the anti-Americanism that increased. Because I think AID, to some extent, people got paranoid.
Circling wagons.
Sure. And part was a frustration of the whole U.S. presence, U.S. officialdom, inside the terrible frustration.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because I'm sure that many of them would have been, well, I don't know, some of them at least, would have been men of goodwill who wanted to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, and increasingly former IBS and former Peace mm-hmm. Corps who knew what they should be doing.
Sure.
And couldn't do it.
And frustration on those that were not in that category.
Would still have frustration.
Professional mm-hmm. AID career people who find themselves in Vietnam and dealing with issues they weren't prepared to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, for all different kinds. Mm-hmm. You also said, though, that AID would take partial credit for IBS's work mm-hmm. and then be patronizing towards volunteers. Could you explain, or at least amplify that a little bit? I think I, again, know what you might have meant, but...
Well, you know, when I was in Vietnam as a volunteer, mm-hmm. all of our contacts were Aggies, right? I mean, AID Ag people. There was one guy named Bob Bartlett who would take IBS volunteers over to the Philippines and get plants. Was it papaya plants? Would bring them back, mm-hmm. and they would plant them in a grove where they would grow well. It was an effort to introduce or to encourage, and I think it was papaya. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, he used IBS volunteers in pretty menial ways to do that. But they thought, well, this is a free trip, and we're going to have, you know. That kind of patronizing. Mm-hmm. I remember AID people coming up to Hue when I was there as a volunteer, bringing us peanut butter and stuff out of the commissary, and going around looking at our projects, and in their reports it would fall under their report. You know, it would be an AID project that and at best IBS would be given credit as doing this AID program. Well, they're funding us, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, in a sense they should take some credit.
So that's the kind of thing I meant.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I thought, I wasn't exactly sure, but that's pretty much what I thought.
It was no big deal, probably, but a little resentment there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that would be pretty obvious.
IBS volunteers sweating it out in the boonies and AID getting all the glory and credit. And IBS wasn't looking for credit, but it was just a little resentment that we're adding to their portfolio of achievements and success.
You had 66, or 67 rather, through 69. By 69, did you want to stay longer?
I was ready to come home. I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. I had a family. Mm-hmm. Security was a problem. Those 2 years were very intense years for me. Mm-hmm. And I felt I really needed to come home. Mm-hmm.
Did you recommend Mankey for as your successor?
It seems I did. I mm-hmm. certainly would have been comfortable doing that, and I mm-hmm. think I probably did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I did.
Because you talked a little bit about him mm-hmm. when we were having dinner.
Yeah.
And
very capable guy. Very mm-hmm. capable guy. Heart in the right place, too. Mm-hmm. You don't always get those two things in one person.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a difficult mm-hmm. matching up. What did he do as a volunteer?
Taught English.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Not long, because we brought him into the... I remember when I was making my rounds, I went up to visit him, and I think it was in Quy Nhơn or Quy Ngai.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a little room on the second floor of his place. And we talked long, and I think I didn't get back to Saigon before a letter from him was there, maybe when I arrived, this long letter about IBS's presence and what we should do. It was just well written, and the kind of letter you say, geez, you know, this guy's got leadership qualities.
Uh-huh.
I mean, some of it was critical.
Uh-huh.
But it was good. And so he didn't stay in the field long. We brought him in the leadership position.
As a team leader? I kind of...
I don't think so. What was his position?
ACOP?
No. I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Okay. Some of the annual reports may have.
Probably. Yeah.
Have him listed there.
Because could have been regional. Rich Jones was in Da Nang. I don't know what that would have been, the region. I don't know, but I remember being very impressed with that letter.
Mm-hmm. And Swift would have been...
He was in this Delta.
Okay. I thought as team leader he had the North.
No.
No? Okay.
No. Steve was in Ag.
Yeah.
I think he was in agricultural.
Yeah, because I was wondering how he and Sabina met.
Well, everybody on the team knew each other.
Yeah.
And they were both Aggies.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I guess as when he got to be a team leader, he had some more contact with
her. He may have replaced Roger Montgomery when he left.
I don't know.
Roger was there quite a while before he got there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he wasn't there when I left.
Okay.
But Steve was in the Delta, and he was an Aggie.
Mm-hmm.
And for one thing, they were both Aggie. But that romance, I don't think started, that was late in blooming.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to have this off at the time so I can catch you up and mm-hmm. on that. Yeah, the question I had here was, did you know Hugh Menke before he became chief of party, and what was your mm-hmm. relationship, and what opinion did you hold of him? And mm-hmm. certainly you've covered that pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Did you keep in contact with him when you were already back from the States and he was chief of party?
Somewhat. I never encouraged that because I knew he had his hands full. But he had that bound for me and sent it.
He was the one who bound the books, right? Okay.
And then when I went back, maybe in 72,
mm-hmm.
I stayed at the IBS house.
Mm-hmm.
He was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that contact with him. And that's probably the last.
What was the last time when IBS was still functional?
I don't know.
Okay. Because you said you were back in 72. I was wondering if it was still going on in 72.
Yeah, it was there.
Okay. Volunteers in the field?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the way Hugh talked, it really looked bleak.
Yeah. You know?
And so I would imagine late 72, 73 is when it folded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And any precipitating reason?
Oh, think back to those times, Paul. Can you
think
back to
those
times? I mean, there was no hope.
Okay.
We were trying to get out. We were negotiating. We were pleading with the VC to let us out.
With the VC?
Mm-hmm. Well, North Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the
yeah.
conference in Paris.
Okay, I thought you meant IVS.
Well, you said precipitating event.
No, I meant of IVS leaving.
Not internally that I know of.
Okay.
But just a realization, I just assumed.
Yeah.
It was just a realization that there's no future here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do anything, and it's gonna fold.
So it wasn't so much an IV, an AID cutting off of the program.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But you know, I was stateside then. I didn't.
Okay. Well, that's why I was asking you if you.
Not that I know.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple. Sort of generic questions, which would be sort of to round up,
mm-hmm.
because it is getting late. You mentioned that generally you were heading towards bed by about 10-ish, and we're about a quarter of now or so.
Mm-hmm.
The IVS mission, this is as a general thing, what did you perceive the IVS mission to be?
When?
Ah, okay. Well, is there a generic?
I think that has evolved.
Okay.
And you really have to say
when. You really do have to say when.
My understanding is that it started with the Marshall Plan,
mm-hmm.
by a group of clergy,
yeah.
who said that young Americans, before they get married and tied down, have something to offer. Sending all this money, all this financial aid, all this material aid overseas, that young Americans out of college can be a presence,
mm-hmm.
on the ground, and you know, so that was okay then. I think when I arrived as a volunteer, what I perceived as the mission of IVS was to be in partnership with Vietnamese in the developmental process. And that was in an agricultural setting. To be in partnership with them as they develop their economy, their technology, their efforts to raise themselves up on the developmental scale. I think when I was there as chief of park, it grew to be more a case of we are there to stand in solidarity with the people who are the victims of a terrible war.
Okay.
And we do that by working with them in ways that give them hope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I probably wouldn't have said it that way then, but I think that's what we perceived our mission. Maybe subconsciously, maybe not able to articulate it, maybe just an inner knowledge that you know, the developmental stuff is really pie in the sky right now. We have a fraternal, some kind of a familial relationship with the people who are victims.
Mm-hmm.
And our role is to stand with them in that. So, does that make sense?
Well, that makes a lot of sense. That's very good. That's better than what I was,
mm-hmm.
was thinking of.
And you see what it's evolved into now? I'm not sure I understand. I mean, worldwide, global, you know, what the IVS generic mission is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has a much different form now than it did when I was with it.
Yeah. And it's going through more changes.
Sure.
And even as we speak.
And it should.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, so I don't say that sour grapes or anything. I think it has to change.
Yeah.
And I've lost touch. I don't know what, I really don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably pretty good.
Well, yeah, it is changing. I mean, you know, Don was director. He will be stepping down at the end of this month. So they'll be looking for new leadership.
Hmm.
You know,
good. Hope they find some good stuff. Good people.
Yeah.
I hope they come. I hope it comes from the ranks of alumni.
I don't know if it will or not.
Yeah.
This should probably just pause this. What I have else in mind, but very, very, very quick though. Again, I'll just repeat this so it's on the tape. Some of the last. Questions that we've asked people are how they look back on the IVS experiences having shaped their own life
mm-hmm.
since then. And to some extent you answered that a little bit on the back of the form.
Okay.
But if you could amplify or...
Well, I need to frame it in a different way and probably
okay.
in a way that you will not hear others. Simply because where I'm at now.
All right.
It's my firm conviction that everything that I have done, at least since college, has prepared me for the ministry. Certainly not least, maybe most of all, my experience in Vietnam with IVS.
See, I was going to ask you how you get from that IVS experience to the ministry, and then this is...
Very easy.
Yeah, this is... You're already going into that.
The cross-cultural experience,
mm-hmm.
the global experience, the experience in human suffering,
mm-hmm.
The experience in human conflict, the experience in cross languages, all of that,
mm-hmm.
and the things I've done since. I was with the university for
mm-hmm.
a few years, 3 or 4 years. Which made seminary feel much more comfortable for me than it would have otherwise. I finally went to seminary.
That being in a university?
SIU here.
Yeah. So your time at Southern Illinois, you were director of the assistant to. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Well, I thought I.
Well, I didn't take the heat. I didn't.
Okay, assistant to the director of the Vietnamese Studies program, and that prepared you for the seminary in what way?
3 years in academia.
Okay, so it was the academe going it back into seminary.
Sure.
Okay, all right.
Being able to take a few classes, you know, just
okay.
keep. I compiled a book that kind of was my decompression chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was published, it was just kind of a resolution to it. I did some work with insurance sales, but the training was called counselor selling. Developed a lot of communication skills, listening skills, people skills. I worked with a crisis intervention and counseling center here.
Mm-hmm.
Had experience doing crisis intervention. Right before going into the ministry, I was the executive director of the hospice program.
Mm.
Now, I don't believe in predestination, okay? But when you look back on it,
mm-hmm.
all of those experiences have prepared me for the ministry. I have absolutely no doubt about that. That's answer number one.
Mm-hmm.
Answer number two is that the Vietnam experience for me was a mountaintop experience. Tremendous experience. Bittersweet. Mm-hmm. Full of pathos. Mm-hmm. Still formative for me. I developed leadership skills. My worldview changed radically. Mm-hmm. My understanding and notion of service was developed there. My understanding of what I now call ministry, mm-hmm. what I probably called then as just helping people, develop there. Values developed there. Prejudices broke down there. Mm-hmm. The effects were too numerous to mention, too numerous to think of. Tremendous experience. You probably know most of what I'm saying by your own personal experience in the Philippines. Mm-hmm.
Without as much of the war intensity.
Sure. And that intensified everything, not just the war part.
Yeah, and not having the responsibility mm-hmm. that you have. So.
Yeah, so.
But many of the basic issues. Mm-hmm. We had to deal with too, because there was also an American presence.
Yeah.
That
American history longer than we had.
Yeah, which made the any kind of American presence all the more profound. Mm-hmm. So we had to deal with that as volunteers individually, mm-hmm. and we had our same discussions and obsessions.
Sure.
And long.
Part of it is the age. Part of it's the generation, part of it's the time, mm-hmm. and part of it's what draws you together to, uh-huh. to be there in that uh-huh. time and place.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and in at least in, I won't try to make parallels between the Philippines and Vietnam here, although there may be some. We were being confronted by a much more nationalistic Filipino, which questioned the American linkage and how healthy it was for their own country. And we began to listen to that and say, if they're right, then all of our good intentions are inherently wrong.
Yes.
You know. So that the best way for them may be to leave them. So, at about 10:25, I think we've covered an awful lot before and after dinner, and I've got this on again because I wanted to make sure that the end of the tape would be clear that it's the end of the tape, and to thank you for responding initially, for hosting me in your house.
Well, it was our pleasure, and I hope that it is not only helpful to your research project, but I hope that your research project proves helpful to the cause, whatever it was, of our mutual mm-hmm. overseas careers, as short as they were.
As short as they were, and even though yours was much longer than mine. Well, we hope so. I mean, in the original grant applications we had to the Association for Asian Studies for the mailing expenses. The point we made was that how do you deliver social, humanitarian, economic services in the middle of war? And it's not just Vietnam, it's Somalia.
Yeah.
Or Haiti or Bosnia or things like that. You know, is there a role? How do you do it if you can? Or do you pull out and wait for a bit before you go in? And one thing we're looking at, and you know, you said that you made when you were chief of part. I don't know if this was when we were on tape or off, but you mentioned that you at least went to Laos once while you were chief of party. I mean, we're looking to see, you know, how was the administration of IBS Vietnam different from IBS Laos? And what difference did that have, too? Because that would, you know, same war, same conflict.
Same war, same conflict, different culture, different degrees of sophistication.
That's true.
Technical, mm-hmm. and otherwise.
But of all the variables, we've at least got a couple that are contiguous.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and sure. and the same organization. So if there's differences in the way things develop that can be traced, not just to the volunteers as
sure.
they evolve,
sure.
et cetera, not just to the war as it evolves, but to the administration too, that may give people clues as well.
Good.
That's the point of the comparative. Oh, hopefully
yeah.
it'll work. if it doesn't, it'll still be a good story. So I better turn this off and
okay.
say thank you much.
That's all right.